This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Content may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion advised.
We tried to contact some paranormal investigators, but they never came through. We saw way more in that house before we finally could leave.
How did that board get out there? What was she so afraid of? I wish I could ask. That day still haunts me.
After a few minutes, Amy turns to me and says, "You need to leave. She doesn't like it when I play with you." She was constantly shifting her eyes from me to the windows as she was speaking.
From Killer Podcasts, true tales of horror, bizarre happenings, unexplainable events. This is Disturbed. Hello, and welcome back to the show. This week, we're bringing you five stories that will chill you to the bone. So sit back, listen closely, and dive into the horror. First, a story narrated by Catherine Restivo. Sometimes the weird kid next door plays by themselves for a reason.
This happened to me when I was 6 or 7 and living in Massachusetts. Back then, my family and I lived in a basement apartment under this other family and their two kids, who lived on the first floor of this house. This family had a daughter that was probably 4 or 5 and another that was maybe 10. I was right between them in age. Now, the 5-year-old was a strange little girl from the very moment you first met her. Let's call her Amy. Amy was quiet and wide-eyed. She would just kind of stare through you every time you talked to her. And she would always rather have been alone. She didn't even enjoy her own mother's company. One day, my mom came to me asking me to play more with Amy because she was alone and had no friends and all that. Since I didn't know anything at the time, I was just like, sure, whatever, and went upstairs to play with her. Once I got there, I was kind of hanging out with her in the living room, watching cartoons, while she just sat there. After a moment, her sister came into the room and asked me if I really came to play with Amy. I said yes, but she didn't really give me any attention, so I was just going to watch TV. Her sister then turns to me and says something like, "Good. Don't interact with her too much. She's not right." I didn't really think much of it at the time, and the day kind of ended with nothing more happening. A couple of days later, I go up to play with Amy again, by my mom's direction, and after a few minutes, Amy turns to me and says, "You need to leave. She doesn't like it when I play with you." She was constantly shifting her eyes from me to the windows as she was speaking. I don't remember exactly what happened because it was years ago, but I remember feeling super uneasy at the time and very uncomfortable. So I went back home and told my mom what happened. My mom was a deeply religious woman, and so was Amy's mom. When I told her this, she immediately got very worried and told me not to go back there. Apparently, Amy's mom had already told my mom that Amy always mentioned a friend that would tell her what to do and what to say, like an imaginary friend. I didn't really have much more contact with Amy alone after this, but I did learn as an adult talking to my mom what came next. After Amy said I couldn't play with her anymore, my mom and her mom went to talk to Amy to understand what was wrong and why she didn't want to play with me. That's when Amy first described her friend in detail. Amy said her friend would yell at her and make her do bad things if she didn't obey her. She described her friend as a young girl, just a bit older than her, with dirt on her face and under her fingernails, and wearing a dirty old white dress. Her friend had very bad teeth, according to her. As she was telling them all this, my mom says that Amy started crying and screaming while staring at the window. She yelled, "Get out of here! I'm not gonna follow you! Mom, make her stop!" As she was telling them all this, my mom says that Amy started crying and screaming while staring at the window. She yelled, "Get out of here! I'm not gonna follow you! Mom, make her stop! She wants me to follow her out the window! Please get her out of here! I don't like her! She's getting angry!" Our mothers immediately took her out of the house, and we all went to stay at a local church. Amy said the girl would come crawling on the ceiling and up the walls at night. She would come into her bedroom and tell her to do bad things like swear at her sister, to beat her parents up, to not brush her teeth, and even things like grab a knife or jump out her window. A few days later, they all went into Amy's room. My mom, Amy, her mom, and a pastor from our church to try an exorcism. My mom says that when they began the exorcism, Amy started begging them to stop, followed by laughing and saying they were all weak and sinners and more vile things. Eventually, Amy just kind of passed out sleeping. I'm not sure what happened after that. We moved out of the house. I never saw Amy again. I was kept totally separate from all of this as a child. I just knew that Amy told me not to play with her anymore. My mom says the pastor went to her house several more times, and Amy also went to a psychologist and a psychiatrist. I just hope she got the help she needs, and that whatever that was, it's left for good.
Our next story is told by Daniel DeGros about the worst feeling in the world, walking down a dark hallway with a pit in your stomach and your head on a swivel.
I used to be a janitor for a small cleaning company. One of the buildings I worked in had some really creepy vibes to it. It wasn't terrible, just really odd. I had to use this old freight elevator where you actually control the lift with a lever. It wasn't difficult to operate, but very unusual, for me at least. On this one night, I was on the 6th floor of the building and said goodnight to the last person leaving for the day. I put my headphones in and started vacuuming, getting the job done as the hours rolled on. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw a grown man standing at the office door. I said, "Hey, sir, sorry, but the building's—" and all at once, this thing was rushing towards me. I let go of the vacuuming to put my hands up, and the fucking thing just got right up to me and disappeared. No cold wind chill, no sound, no nothing. It just vanished. It scared the living shit out of me. The whole incident lasted maybe 10 seconds, and I know this is cowardly, but I just took off running, full sprint. I made my 60-year-old coworker come back up with me to grab the elevator. She said she doesn't clean the 6th floor because she saw something one time. She won't elaborate, and she never spoke to me about it again. The 4th floor of the building houses a courthouse. It's the least creepy place in the entire building, if you can believe it. I was training a new girl, and we had gotten halfway down a hallway one night when the lights went out. She grabbed my hand. She said she was scared of the dark. We used our phones as flashlights and found the light switch. When I switched it on, they started flickering and humming really loudly. The girl started freaking out. She damn near had a panic attack right then and there. I was scared too, but only because I thought I broke something. That same 60-year-old coworker turned the corner and the lights stopped flickering. She said, "What on earth are you two doing?" She didn't see the flickering lights. The new girl quit that night on the car ride home, and I had to show the manager the weird shit that was happening. They never believed me anyways. I ended up requesting a new position somewhere else, but those events still haunt me to this day. I wonder what would have happened if my coworker hadn't shown up, and what else she's seen working in that old building.
The next story comes from user MILFEatsBabies45 and is narrated by Katarina Sveta about moving into a new house and a new haunting experience.
While I was a teenager, my mom and I moved into this house at the end of a long street. The house was a renovated bungalow that had a second floor added on, so the second floor was entirely bedrooms and an extra bathroom, which was attached to the kitchen downstairs. Everything seemed fine when I was moving in, but that first night, I noticed something strange. As I was laying in bed, I heard footsteps going from outside my bedroom door, down the stairs, and out the back. I believed this to be my mom going to the bathroom, as the passageway in the upstairs was very narrow and our doors were across from each other. It happened a few more times in those first couple weeks after we had moved in, and I made a comment to my mom about how much she needed the toilet at night. My mom responded that it was not her, and she thought the footsteps were me. We were both absolutely freaked out. We assumed that it was new house noises from the move and went about our lives. How wrong we were. Over the next 3 years, I came to find that the house was filled with ghosts, or spirits, whatever it was. This place was haunted. Not only did the footsteps never stop, more strange things started happening. I would hear voices around the house, little whispers as I was walking into a room or past a door. I was always home alone. Sometimes, as I walked up the passageway at night to my bedroom, I'd hear a voice coming from my mom's room. A man's voice would say, "Come inside." The first time I heard it, it didn't register until I was inside my room, but when I turned around and opened the door, it was only her inside, sleeping. Once, I was talking to a friend of mine on my cell, and I walked away from it for a moment and walked across the room to grab something. My friend said there was a man's voice she was hearing. It was saying, shut up, over and over again. She said it sounded angry. There were also a few times where our TV would turn on at night for no reason. We currently have the same TV, and this never happened before or since we lived in that house. I was lying in bed alone one night when I hear a knock on my bedroom door. I sat up in my bed because I thought my mom was coming in. And the next moment, I felt something touching the back of my head. It moved down my back slowly, all the way from my neck to my lower back. I absolutely freaked out and ran out of the room. I slept in my mom's bed for the next few nights after that. We tried to contact some paranormal investigators, but they never came through. We saw way more in that house before we finally could leave. Door handles turning on their own, shadowy figures in the passageways, doors and cupboards opening and closing, even a death smell in one corner of the house. I was relieved when we finally found a new place, and I could sleep easy at night knowing nothing was trying to come through my door to get me.
You're listening to Disturbed. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Matt Harris. Seton Tucker and I host the podcast Impact of Influence, which for 2 years covered in depth Alec Murdoch, who was eventually convicted in 2023 of murdering his wife Maggie and son Paul. That story continues to evolve, and we will cover that. Plus, we will tell you stories of other true crime events that have happened in the South. Please join us on Impact of Influence and give us a follow on the Impact of Influence Facebook page.
From DNA testing to the Dixie Mafia, Crime Capsule brings you new stories of true crime in American history. I'm your host, Benjamin Morris. Join us for exclusive interviews with authors from Arcadia Publishing, writing the hottest books on the most chilling stories of our country's past. You can find us wherever you get your favorite podcasts or on evergreenpodcasts.com. Crime Capsule. History so interesting, it's criminal.
Welcome back to the podcast. Our next story happens in the middle of a dark forest when you're all alone, or so you thought. Narrated by the talented Gregory James.
So I grew up in Belgium, even though I have American parents. Since I was young, I've been involved in scouts with my friends. We start scouts when we're 6 years old, and then we go all the way through up until we're 18, and our troops are co-ed the entire time. Once we're adults, we usually become scout leaders. I say all this to give you a little background on me and my friends. We're people who I would consider close with nature and really used to camping and overall feel very comfortable in the outdoors. It's not like we're all huge lumberjacks or master backwoodsmen, but we can handle ourselves okay. Back when we were around 16 years old, one of my friends invited our group to go backpacking in the forest that we have close to our homes. It's not your average American national park with thousands of acres full of stories of Bigfoot, but it definitely has its own charm and legends. I remember our troop was told a century-old tale about werewolves in the forest and a couple of stories about witches. It's not a huge forest, but one could easily get lost if they're not familiar with its trails and all the trees look the same. That being said, we had no reason to fear this forest. We had all been making use of it for years as scouts, and there weren't bears or wolves or anything that posed a serious threat. A couple of us actually did our wilderness survival course here, where we're blindly dropped with nothing but a map in the middle of the forest and had to hike our way to safety. So we started out our camping journey by biking in from the nearby village to the entrance of the forest. Afterwards, we would leave our bikes at the mouth of the trail, since it was an area with lots of hills and few trails for biking. The mood was good. It was a beautiful, slightly chilly autumn evening with a few clouds and a beautiful sunset. We hiked our way through the forest until we got to a small clearing with some grass and prepared our tents for the night. We made a small campfire after making a scout-approved fire circle and ate some beans and sausages for dinner. Maybe even a couple Belgian beers got passed around, who's to say? Around 11 p.m., we decided to call it a night and went to sleep in our own individual tents and sleeping bags. Everything seemed like a normal camping day in our forest. Then, suddenly, around 1:30 in the morning, we all woke up to the sound of what we thought could only be someone drumming. A couple of us got out of our tents with our flashlights, asking what was going on. Our forest has always been a quiet place at night, and during the day, the only noise you could hear were the critters or each other. As you can imagine, the surprise of hearing drums in the middle of the night was super unnerving. We were located on a flat area on the side of a hill, hoping to have a beautiful view in the morning. We could just barely make out, over the top of the other side of the hill, was some light and smoke of what seemed like a bonfire. We figured that this had to be the place where the drum noise was coming from. Us few who had gotten out of our tents decided to just hike over there to see what was going on, and maybe talk with the people who decided that it was a good plan to be making so much noise in a calm forest at 1:30 a.m. We hiked over our hill so that we could have a glance at the people at the other camp to get a sense of who we were dealing with. It took about 15 minutes of walking before we could actually see the bonfire, because it was located in a small circle clearing with lots of trees and bushes around. We crouched towards the bushes in the tree line to get a look of what was going on, finally seeing the people with the drums. I don't recall exactly, but around five people sat around the fire playing on drums in perfect unison, while another group of people were dancing around the bonfire. I say dancing, but that's not what it felt like. These people were making weird, unnatural movements, almost as if they were having spasms, their bodies contorting randomly in all directions. The people dancing around in a circle were wearing full-body outfits of dried grasses and straws, so you couldn't make out their faces at all. At first glance, it looked like people dressing to be one with nature, but after a moment, we realized that these matched the pagan Samhain traditional dresses we had studied in our history classes. Either this was some elaborate gag being performed, or these people were performing some kind of ritual. Everyone in that circle was so serious, I thought it had to be the latter, and it would be best for us if we steered clear. We all backed off as slowly and quietly as we could, and we went back to our camping spot in absolute silence. Once there, we decided to wake the rest and tell them what we had seen. After some deliberation, we decided to pack up at that exact moment and leave. We hiked to the entrance of the forest, got on our bikes, and we all went home. Our community still frequents that forest, and we all spent much more time hiking and camping there, both for scouts and in our free time with friends and family. Lucky for us, nobody has ever seen the circle of people again, and nobody we've told the story to has any memory of that happening in our forest. That being said, it's stuck with me ever since, and I will never forget how we felt out of our place in the forest for the first time in our lives. Whatever they were doing, they didn't want anyone to see them. I think by now I can firmly say that they didn't know my friends and I had found them, but I hate to think of what might have happened to us if they did.
Our final story is narrated by Dallas Stark from r/ghosts, my first Ouija board experience.
My name is Jane, and I grew up in a nice neighborhood on a street with lots of other kids. There was this older couple across the street, the Sochas, and they babysat me whenever my mom needed to be out of the house and couldn't bring me with her. It was always really boring over at their house, but Mrs. Socha would make some lemon bars that were the bomb, so it wasn't all bad. So while I was living on that street, maybe in sixth grade, I was outside riding my bike with all my friends. There was a big group of us, including kids from around the neighborhood and my school friends, and this girl named April. She didn't live in the neighborhood, but I had a huge crush on her. For some reason, Mrs. Socha invited us all into her home that day. All seven of us left our bikes and helmets scattered around her porch and front walk and went inside. We were all chilling in the living room, and Mrs. Socha brought us out a big stack of board games to pick through while she worked on something in her backyard. We looked through all the different games and found a very beautiful and ornately carved wooden board. We didn't recognize it at all, so we opened its box and found that it was a Ouija board. Included inside was a heavy black stone planchette with an opening carved in it so we could see the letter underneath. Of course, being kids, we started joking around and trying to freak each other out, asking questions and moving the planchette around. At some point, someone threw out the question, "Does Jane have a crush on April?" And the planchette immediately moved over to, "Yes." I naturally denied it and quickly rose to my feet, accusing everyone of moving it on purpose. Because I did, in fact, like April, I was super embarrassed and trying to leave quickly. So fast, in fact, that I forgot my bike helmet in the entryway of the Socha's house. I got 10 seconds down the road before noticing and turning around and riding back to go get it. I was standing in the front yard, kickstanding my bike, when out of nowhere, I heard everyone start screaming inside the house. I watched as all of my friends bolted out the front door, throwing shoes on and crawling onto their bikes and speeding away. I stood there, confused, and looked back to the house. The front door opened, but nobody was standing there. All of a sudden, my bike helmet came flying out at me like someone was kicking a soccer goal with all their might. It flew straight towards my head, and I dodged enough for it to barely miss me. I grabbed it and took off. I pedaled harder than I ever had across the street to my house. I can't remember what my friends said happened for some reason, but a few days later, I was back at the Socha's being babysat because my mom was away. She brought that same pile of board games, but the Ouija board box wasn't there. I remember saying, "One of them is missing," and she looked through the stack and insisted that all of her games were there. I asked, "What about the Ouija game?" Her head snapped to look at me with a startling speed. Her eyes were locked onto me, the most intense look she had ever given me. She said, "I never put that out for you guys. How did you know about my mother's Ouija board?" I told her that it was in the pile of board games she brought out for my friends last time we were over, and that we had messed with it and something freaked everyone out, so they ran off in a hurry. Her face changed to a stern and grave expression, and she zoned out into the corner of the room above my head. "That board is hidden down in the basement," she explained. "It's in a chest, wrapped in blankets, and the planchette is in a different room behind a locked door." She swore that she would never have gone to the trouble of getting it out for us to play with, and started interrogating me about what questions we had asked it and if we had closed the session. When I told her the details, she looked disturbed and grabbed me by the hand and brought me into the middle of the room. She went and grabbed the bundle of herbs that I would later learn to call a smudge stick and prayed over me for what felt like hours while wafting this smoking bundle in front of me. She walked to all four corners of her yard, praying and waving the stick around. She then went and lined each of the doors in her house with salt. I wish I remembered more. She died 8 years ago and took all of those secrets about the Ouija board and her rituals to her grave. How did that board get out there? And what was she so afraid of? I wish I could ask. That day still haunts me.
I'm your host, Doug Bailey, and this has been Disturbed, a production of Killer Podcasts and part of the Evergreen Network. For more paranormal and true crime shows, visit killerpodcasts.com. Follow our social channels at Disturbed Podcast on Instagram or Disturbed_pod on Twitter. If you enjoyed the show, please consider subscribing and reviewing on your favorite listening platform. Share your own true horror story at disturbedpodcast.com. Music by Epidemic Sound and by Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. Our producers are Noah Fouts and Elizabeth Flood. Our audio engineer is Nathan Corson. Executive producers Bridget Coyne and Gerardo Orlando. Until next time, stay safe out there.
On the morning of August 1st, 1966, shots ring out from the observation deck of the clock tower on the University of Texas campus. It marks the infamous beginning of the modern era of mass shootings in America.
You're listening to Stop the Killing podcast. Join us as we take you behind the crime scene tape to explain global mass shootings and mass attacks. I'm Sarah Ferris, but more importantly, this is Catherine Schweit, the former head of the FBI's active shooter program.
I spent 5 years as the FBI's top executive looking for answers to the mass shooting crisis. I've been at the shooting scenes. I've traced heroic acts of bravery. And I've sat silently and listened to the heart-wrenching stories from survivors.
Amongst this horror, there is hope. We all hold the key to stop the killing. You just need to know how to unlock the door. Download Stop the Killing and be part of the solution. Search Stop the Killing on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects.